Welcome to the American Cafe. I'm your host, Ira Melman. The biggest and most well-known celebration of the motion picture industry took place this past week.
The Oscar goes to 12 Years a Slave.
Mike O'Sullivan is here with a look back at the Academy Awards. Although the next U.S. presidential contest is still a few years away, talk of another Clinton in the White House. This time Hillary is the talk of the U.S. political world. But there is some apprehension among some.
So many things can happen in 2 years that I'm sure there's a little set of anxieties promoting the Democrats that their candidate seems already to be in place.
VOA's national correspondent Jim Malone visits the cafe with the story. Bernard Chessman checks in from New York, where the city is helping more fashion designers get started and thrive in a very competitive business.
It's important, I think, for the city to understand labels like us. We need their help before we can grow to become the Ralph Laurens, the Donna Karens, and become those powerhouse designers.
All of that and more on this week's American Cafe. The films Gravity and 12 Years a Slave took top honors at the Academy Awards in Hollywood. Michael Sullivan reports the space odyssey Gravity earned 7 Oscars, including one for director Alfonso Cuarón. 12 Years a Slave earned 3 major awards, including the top prize of the evening.
Actor Will Smith announced the winner of Best Picture of 2013.
The Oscar goes to 12 Years a Slave.
The film tells the true story of Solomon Northrup, a free black man sold into slavery in Louisiana before the American Civil War. British director Steve McQueen accepted the award with his fellow producers, including the actor and filmmaker Brad Pitt. McQueen dedicated the Oscar to victims of slavery.
Everyone deserves not just to survive, but to live. This is the most important legacy of Solomon Northrup. I dedicate this award to all the people who have endured slavery and the 21 million people who still suffer slavery today.
Kenya-born actress Lupita Nyong'o was honored for her supporting role in the film as the female slave Patsy. She edged out Jennifer Lawrence of the crime caper American Hustle and Julia Roberts of the drama August Osage County. Nyong'o recounted the life of the character she played, a story passed down through Northrup's memoir.
It doesn't escape me for one moment that so much joy in my life is thanks to so much pain in someone else's. And so I want to salute the spirit of Patsy for her guidance. And for Solomon, thank you for telling her story and your own.
12 Years a Slave was honored for its adapted screenplay by John Ridley. The space drama Gravity earned an Oscar for Mexican director Alfonso Cuarón. Gravity was also honored for its cinematography, film editing, and sound mixing, visual effects, and original score. American Hustle, which was nominated for 10 awards, earned none. Matthew McConaughey earned the Oscar for Best Actor for his role as an AIDS activist in Dallas Buyers Club. The contested field included Christian Bale for American Hustle, Bruce Dern for The Tale of Family Relationships, Nebraska, Leonardo DiCaprio for the story of Greed, The Wolf of Wall Street, and Chiwetel Ejiofor for his role as Solomon Northrup in 12 Years a Slave. McConaughey paid his respects to the other nominees.
All these performances were impeccable, in my opinion. I didn't see a false note anywhere.
Jared Leto was named Best Supporting Actor for his role as a transgender AIDS activist in Dallas Buyers Club. Accepting the Oscar, Leto recalled those whose stories the film recounts.
This is for the 36 million people who have lost the battle to AIDS, and to those of you out there who have ever felt injustice because of who you are or who you love. Tonight, I stand here in front of the world with you and for you. Thank you so much.
Cate Blanchett was named Best Actress for her role in the Woody Allen comedy drama Blue Jasmine. She says this year's film nominees make a statement.
And perhaps those of us in the industry who are still foolishly clinging to the idea that that female films with women at the center are niche experiences, they are not. Audiences want to see them, and in fact, they earn money. So...
Frozen from Disney was named Best Animated Feature and also earned an Oscar for its original song, Let It Go. The Italian entry, The Great Beauty, was named Best Foreign Language Film. The Oscar for Best Documentary Feature went to 20 Feet from Stardom, which looks at the lives of backup singers in the music industry. The Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences presents the Oscars. The ceremony is the highlight of the year for the Hollywood movie industry. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
. 2014 is a congressional election year in the United States, and U.S. voters can expect to see a lot of former President Bill Clinton and his wife, the former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. Both Clintons are in demand to campaign on behalf of Democratic Party candidates this year. That could also work to Hillary Clinton's benefit if she decides to run for president in 2016. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more from Washington.
Expect to see a lot of Bill Clinton campaigning on behalf of Democrats. In this case, a Senate candidate in Kentucky.
It makes a big difference who wins this election. And Allison Lundigan Grimes should win it and will with your help.
Clinton remains popular, and Democrats are eager to take advantage of his celebrity status. The former president is also featured in a new Democratic Party video on voting rights.
Breaking down barriers and expanding opportunities has always been the hallmark of our nation and the bedrock of the Democratic Party.
Bill Clinton is sure to play a key role should Hillary Clinton decide to run for president in 2016. She's quietly ramping up her public appearances, including a recent event in New York.
One of the best pieces of advice that I've ever heard from anyone is Eleanor Roosevelt in the 1920s. Who said that, you know, women in politics or in public roles should grow skin like a rhinoceros. I think there's some truth to that.
Clinton has a wide lead in public opinion polls among possible 2016 contenders, and her candidacy would energize Democratic women, says analyst Stephen Hess.
What would be rather special about Hillary Clinton, although increasingly the case around the world, is we would have the first woman president of the United States. And I think to some degree that would be a factor in her advantage in terms of the degree that it mobilized women, who are more than half of the population.
But the election is still more than 2 years away, says Hess. A lifetime in politics.
So many things can happen in 2 years that I'm sure there's a little set of anxieties promoting the Democrats that their candidate always seems already to be in place.
With no clear front runner on the Republican side, Republican strategist Ron Bongean acknowledges that Hillary Clinton would be a formidable candidate.
We're going to need somebody that is charismatic, smart, and astute. And it's going to be interesting to see who comes forward.
But voters likely will be looking for change after President Barack Obama leaves office. And analyst Stuart Rothenberg says that presents a challenge.
The next Democratic nominee, whoever that is going to have to make sure that he or she runs a very separate, distinct, different kind of campaign.
Hillary Clinton is expected to decide on a presidential run by the end of this year. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Many see young designers as the lifeblood of the fashion industry. The city of New York is hoping to maintain its billing as a top fashion capital of the world by encouraging young designers through a program of fashion incubators. VOA's Bernard Chessman reports from New York City.
On one floor of a nondescript building in New York, there are 10 small designer labels from all over the United States. These fashion creators, selected from more than 100 applicants, are hoping their designs will become the next big thing. For 2 years, the New York City Economic Development Corporation provides them with considerable support, like bargain rental space. Daniel Vosovic is one of the designers.
It could be legal help. It could be I want to launch my own online store. It could be I'm having production issues, and they team you up with mentors from within the industry to help guide, offer advice, but no one owns a part of our company. There's no cash involved. There's no investments. It's just support.
Vucevic, who was a finalist in season 2 of the television show Project Runway, has a following. He's been developing a celebrity base. This past year, his customers included Mila Kunis, Emma Stone, and Elizabeth McGovern. But to get to the next major level, becoming the celebrity designer, takes more than inspiration. He knows it takes good advice and help from mentors like Malcolm Carfrae of Calvin Klein and April Yucatel, formerly with Diane von Furstenberg.
I'm a small label, and there's only so much I can support. So it's important, I think, for the city to understand labels like us. We need their help before we can grow to become the Ralph Laurens, the Donna Karens, and become those powerhouse designers.
Eric Johnson directs the Fashion Incubator Program for New York City.
And I think that any entrepreneur will tell you that it's about, you know, having people who've had success in their own business. And, you know, you have to remember that these are businesses that are comprised of just a few individuals. So having people who've really been there and done that when it comes to starting and growing businesses is an invaluable type of resource to be able to offer them.
Vucevic does all of his manufacturing in New York. It gives him greater control and allows him to personally oversee most steps of production. He also believes in a long-term approach to business planning.
One collection is not going to make a career. You will slide down if, again, the clothes aren't great. If you ship late, you're going to burn bridges. So to me, success is longevity, it's loyalty, and personal fulfillment.
Vucevic does have a growing worldwide internet customer base, and he is seen in boutiques throughout the United States. His label is growing, and much credit, he says, belongs to the Fashion Incubator Program. Bernard Schussman, VOA News, New York.
Wind energy is one of the fastest-growing sources of new electricity around the world. In 2012, global wind energy capacity grew by 19% with more than 150,000 turbines operating in 90 countries. But some wind farms may have an additional environmental benefit beyond generating renewable energy. As VOA's Roseanne Scurbo reports, a new study is out that shows that offshore turbines could weaken the power of hurricanes.
Over several decades, Stanford University's Mark Jacobson has developed a complex computer model to study air pollution, energy, weather, and climate. The engineering professor recently used it to address a nagging question facing the renewable energy industry. Could hurricane-force winds destroy offshore windmills?
The first thought I had was, well, maybe the turbines would extract enough power from the hurricane to diminish the hurricane, but I couldn't prove that yet unless I ran some numerical simulations.
So Jacobson, a co-author of the study in the journal Nature Climate Change, ran the numbers on three of the most powerful hurricanes to hit the U.S. East and Gulf Coasts in recent years. The model simulated what would happen if large wind farms with tens of thousands of turbines had been in the path of those storms.
And we found that the hurricanes would be dissipated quite a bit if you have large arrays of offshore wind turbines. The storm surge could be reduced by up to 79% and wind speeds by 50% or even more.
And the resulting milder winds would also prevent damage to the turbines. Jacobson explains that as the hurricane approaches, the spinning turbines remove energy from the storm's edge and slow down the wind behind it. That slowdown in turn would lower wave height and reduce the winds that push those waves toward the coast.
So by the time the hurricane gets to shore, it's significantly weakened. And storm surge is due to winds going over a long distance over the water, and the storm surge is reduced quite a bit as well. So there's these two benefits, reduced winds and reduced storm surge due to the large arrays of offshore turbines.
Storm surge leads to flooding and death, says University of Delaware professor Christina Archer, a co-author of the study. She says barrier walls or islands buffer storm surge, but the study shows turbines can also play a role.
We thought we could actually act on the wind, which is the driving force of the storm surge. So by reducing the wind, you're actually reducing the storm surge dramatically.
Archer suggests locating wind farms in offshore hotspots where they could tap the wind for electricity, offsetting fossil fuel use and its resulting emissions and pollution. She adds they could also act as insurance against storm damage, as the study simulations demonstrate.
And so if you can be smart about it, then you can have still very, very high benefits and locally. So, for example, for Katrina, we placed the turbines just upwind of New Orleans, and so we protected New Orleans by taking action in New Orleans. So local actions had actual local benefits.
That 2005 hurricane on the Gulf Coast was the costliest natural disaster in U.S. history, with a death toll in the thousands. The study suggests that while there has been political and social resistance in the United States to installing even a few hundred offshore wind turbines, let alone tens of thousands, a wind farm would pay for itself in the long term by generating power and helping to reduce hurricane damage. Archer sees partnerships developing among policymakers, emergency managers, and the wind industry that could lead to new strategies for coastal power and protection that can also save lives. Roseanne Scherbel, VOA News, Washington.
Every day in the United States, a dozen pedestrians are struck and killed by cars. Many fatalities happen at busy intersections or when pedestrians don't use marked crosswalks or drivers ignore traffic signals. Local officials across the country have tried many approaches to improve safety. The Washington suburb of Montgomery County, Maryland, has launched a series of street safety awareness campaigns. As Faiza Al-Masri tells us in this story, narrated by Faith Lapidus, the latest of these campaigns is graphic, using the storytelling power of comic strips.
When Montgomery County officials hired Sharp & Company to design their new campaign, the communication consultant group began with a close look at the targeted population, an immigrant neighborhood where pedestrian fatalities were on the rise.
And what we discovered was that while there were plenty of English-speaking people in the area, there was also a high percentage of Spanish-speaking people.
Company CEO Mary Arts says her team started to do more research, interviewing people from the community to determine the best way to reach them.
What is it about the Hispanic culture? What interests them? What's unique to them? As well as English-speaking folks. And we looked at this, and one of the things we discovered is that the telenovela is hugely popular in the Hispanic culture. A telenovela is a kind of television show. We might call it a soap opera in the U.S. So we thought, why don't we translate the telenovela into a comic or a graphic novel format?
And that's what they did.
We begin our story with Maria and Marco. And Maria very much loves Marco. And Marco has just been hit by a car. She's, you know, bemoaning that he was hit by a car. And then Marco admits to her that he didn't use the crosswalk. And now Maria is like, oh my goodness, you didn't use the crosswalk. That's so dangerous. And now Maria, as people are using the crosswalk, if only he'd used the crosswalk.
The graphic story is bilingual.
Dios mio! My beloved Marco has been hit by a car. And then Maria, mi amor. So there's just a little bit of Spanish added to the English. So we call that the Spanglish version.
The comic strips began appearing on buses and bus shelters in December.
People can see it quickly, understand what the messages are, and are attracted to it because it's a colorful medium.
Jeff Dunkel is pedestrian safety coordinator for the County Department of Transportation. He says there are two main causes for pedestrian accidents.
Cars not yielding to pedestrians in the crosswalk, and then pedestrians crossing where they shouldn't or when they shouldn't against the light. And we found that people were sometimes careless because they didn't feel like, you know, that they were really that much at risk.
While his department can modify traffic signal timing and upgrade sidewalks, Dunkel says educating the public about safety on the roadway is just as important.
We first make a lot of engineering improvements to try to make our roads safer for pedestrians, but then we launch an education campaign that teaches our pedestrians how to use the roadway safely, how to use crosswalks, how to use the pedestrian signals.
Using comics to deliver that message, he says, is clever and effective. And
there was concern that maybe a comic strip wasn't a serious enough treatment of a serious issue like pedestrian safety, but I will say that the attention that this campaign has gotten is testimony to how this is a serious treatment of this story.
Hispanic activist Carlos Iglesias is pleased with the campaign's focus on the Hispanic community, and he'd like to see it expand with the comic images in many other places.
I would like to see, for example, maybe people with t-shirts, members of the community talking with other members in the community in the bus stop, for example.
Jeff Dunkel says he welcomes any suggestions that can help reduce pedestrian fatalities, adding that Montgomery County has tried a variety of approaches.
One of our other campaigns was to target the pedestrians and the drivers in parking lots, what we call heads up in parking lots, the idea that drivers and pedestrians need to keep their heads up and not be distracted. One of our other campaigns was we called our Best Eyes campaign of Hey You, I'm Looking at You, that was trying to encourage our pedestrians to be establishing eye contact with drivers.
The graphic approach for raising awareness has attracted attention outside the county.
The Library of Congress has called us and asked us to contribute the campaign to their permanent collection for the Applied and Graphic Arts Division, which we're completely excited about. It's really a great acknowledgement.
Mary Art says the message of this campaign is clear. Whether driving or walking, people look after one another because pedestrian safety is everyone's responsibility. For writer Faiza El-Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
The last common ancestor of flies and humans lived more than 500 million years ago. But scientists say as both organisms evolved, they developed similar strategies to sense movement around them. So scientists at Stanford University are using flies in an effort to better understand how the human brain works. VOA's George Putich has more.
A human brain contains more than 100 billion neurons, while the fly's brain has just 100,000. So it is much easier for scientists to study how a fly reacts to a perceived motion. To do this, scientists designed a tiny treadmill in the shape of a ball, which a fly attached to a pole can move with its feet in any direction. A small panoramic screen in front of it displays moving objects, causing the fly to avoid them by moving its feet. Thomas Klandinin is associate professor of neurobiology at Stanford University.
By moving the treadmill, they tell us what they saw, and we can measure kind of the relationship between what they see and what they do by this kind of automatic report.
In another part of the lab, a volunteer is watching the same images while his brain activity is being recorded. Scientists say they were surprised to find that human brains and fly brains both follow the same patterns.
The basic algorithms that the brain uses to do very fundamental things in vision seem to be very similar.
Scientists say they are now trying to identify which neurons the flies use to react to perceived motion, looking for a clue to how the human brain processes the same information. Their ultimate goal is to develop better strategies for helping people with psychiatric and neurological diseases. George Putich, VOA News, Washington.
That is all the time we have for this week's program. Our thanks to executive producer Bob Doty and editors Faith Lapidus and Jane Friedman. If you'd like to hear more about these stories, check our website at voanews.com. And we'd love to hear from you. Send us an email from wherever you are to our studios in Washington, D.C. You can email us at americancafe@voanews.com. Why not give us a telephone call? Dial the international code, then the number 1 for the United States, followed by 202-205-9942. When you hear the VOA ID, press 05 and then leave your questions or your comments. For all the folks here at VOA, I'm Ira Melman. We'll see you next time on American Cafe.